I'm going to give you three questions. And a lot of you are like, oh, I'm not going to write it down. I'm going to encourage you to actually take out your pen or your phone, whatever it is, because in our app, there's a whole notes area now under the sermon notes that you can take these down. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is something that I've done before where we've taken extensive time. You're going to kind of get the quick version of this. I want you to answer this question first, okay? How would you describe yourself? Okay, really quick. I just kind of want you to go top of the brain. How do you see yourself? Okay, write down some key words of how you see yourself. Adonis, you know? What do you think of when you think of yourself? What words do you use? I don't want to give you too many examples because it might send you in the wrong direction, but when you're in your honest moments of who you are, what do you think of yourself? Positive, negative, you know? Just kind of be honest. No one else is going to see this, so you're not doing this for anybody else's benefit but yourself. All right, now you can keep thinking on that, but I want you to go, and if you're doing this on a paper, you have do an extra or a next column. What would others say about you? Okay, so now I go and I ask your friends and your family the exact same question. How would you describe Luis? How would you describe Chris? How would you describe them? What would they say? What words would they use? Just write some of those down. Same question, but to a different audience. By the way, if you ever want to have a real fun conversation, pick a good friend and then sit down across, take them out for coffee and say, so, what do you say about me? And then see what they have to say, okay? All right, now we're going to stretch. Okay, we're going to stretch a little bit on question number three. I want you to picture God is talking to one of his angels and your name comes up. How would he describe you? Not the church answer, by the way. I want to know what you think would actually happen. All right, now you can go on this a lot longer. We won't have time to do that this morning. So, how consistent are your answers in those three sections? Right? Most of us, not very. And then we could really dig into this. If we were having this one-on-one conversation, I'd be asking you, okay, so were these mostly positive things that you wrote? Were they mostly negative things? Were they negative when you look at yourself, but positive when your friends look at you? Were they negative when God looks at you? There's so much in here that we would uncover. And if we took the time to dig into all of your answers, we'd probably find a bunch of good stuff and a bunch of bad stuff. Because see, how we see ourselves, right? This whole answer to this exercise is actually dictated by what we've experienced in our lifetime. It's set up by what we've been told by others. It's influenced by our personalities, our motivations. It changes regularly. Okay, this isn't just one of those things that happens once. And here's why we're talking about this today, okay? We're going to be looking at an Old Testament character. Here's why we're looking at this. Because every action you take is driven at some level by your identity, by how you see yourself. Every single thing you do is driven by your identity, and it's either by how you see yourself or how you want to see yourself. Everything you do, all the ways you interact with your spouse, your kids, your coworkers, the things you do, where you spend your money, all that is driven by how you see yourself. And here's the problem. My view of myself is rarely fully correct. Now, if that's true, and I believe it is, then understanding our true identity is utterly crucial to life and practice. But in order for that to happen, this is the idea I kind of want to drive home this morning, is that if in order for that to happen, our identity has to be grounded in God's reality, not my own. Okay? Has to be grounded in how God sees who I am and not in how I see me or how other people see me. So I want to unpack this, and we're going to continue this series. We started last week called Old Testament Characters. And if you remember, we're looking at different people throughout the Old Testament, the whole first chunk of the Bible. And the reason we're looking at them is because while the Bible is the story of God, you have all these stories of people and how they connected to God in the midst of his story, right? We want to see how they dealt with him, how they spoke with him, how they responded to him, what did they do, both positive and negative, because we can learn a lot from that. And so this morning, we're going to look at a guy named Gideon. I think a character that's going to help us a lot with this whole issue of identity. Now, for those that don't know, I'm going to put up a little timeline here. So it's a little hard to see. You can see the red arrow here. Gideon lived in the time of the judges. Now, last week we talked about Abraham. And so Abraham was, 2000 BCE, roughly when we had that whole call that we talked about last week. You know, he comes, they end up growing up into this nation because he has kids, they have kids. They go to Egypt, they grow up into this big nation, they come out, and they leave Egypt, and then they do this whole conquest of the promised land where they come into it. And then after all that, they settled in this land, they've conquered a bunch of it. The nation is, it's this full nation of people. They settle in, and that is called the time of the judges, which is why the book in your Bible, if you're looking for this, is in the book of Judges. And the key verse in the entire book of Judges is this one right here. In those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as they saw fit. So what happened was there was this pattern that developed in the nation. Israel, everybody did what they wanted to do. They did what felt right. They did what, conventional wisdom said, just do whatever makes you happy because that's, the ultimate goal in life. And so they would all do these things. And in doing so, they would totally walk away from God. They would abandon God. They wouldn't worship him. They wouldn't pay him any attention. They would begin to live sinful, horrible lives. They partnered. And so God would say, fine, that's how you're going to live. And he would let foreign invaders come in and begin to attack and kill and conquer and rule. And the Israelites would go, oh, this is miserable. This is horrible. We hate this. God, we're so sorry. Would you please save us? And God would send someone along, a judge, that's what they called him, who would come in and he would lead Israel and he would save them from their enemies and they'd be all happy until they weren't. And then they went back to following other gods and they'd abandon God and God would let someone else come in. And they began this cycle, right, of going around and around and around and around. The leader would die, the people would forget about God, they would descend into unbelief and would start all over. So the deliverance of Gideon, one of these judges, actually if you look at the end of the story, it ends with him and 300 warriors surrounding a camp of enemies of over 100,000 warriors, okay? This is how it ends. And what happens is Gideon actually, it started with about 32,000 warriors, still way outnumbered. But God said, no, that's way too many, because if you defeat the enemy with that many, you're going to take all the credit. So Gideon sent everybody home that's scared. So he says, anybody scared? And, 22,000 guys are like, yeah, I don't want to be here, right? I'm a farmer. I don't want to be here. So he said, all right, you all go home. God says, nah, there's still too many. He said, next time they go to drink from the river, the stream, I want you to watch. And I want you to only keep the guys that will scoop the water out and drink like this. Anybody that puts their face right down in the water, you don't want them. Well, that eliminates another 10,000. So you got 300 left. And he splits them into three companies of 100. They're like on hills around the Midianites, which is the nation that was, oppressing them. And they go in the middle of the night, they have this midnight attack, and they have these torches, they have them covered by these clay pots. And at the signal of Gideon, they smash them. They basically put their torches in the air and they start yelling, 300 men. Well, 100,000 Midianites feel like they're being attacked. They go into chaos. They turn on each other, and they basically break, and they run. And at that point, not only do these 300 begin to chase them, they call everybody else. They have this amazing victory. They kill the Midianites. It's a fascinating story. And Gideon is the hero in this story. He's the guy who trusts God and obeys him in the face of these overwhelming odds, right? 300 men against 100,000. But if you had talked to Gideon when this all started, he would have never described himself as this kind of person. So I'm going to go back to the beginning of the story. We find this in Judges chapter 6. It starts out like this. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, remember? They're kind of going through the cycle again. And for 7 years, he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts and caves and strongholds. OK? Okay, and here's the crux of the problem. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and all the other eastern people would invade the country, and they would camp on the land and ruin the crops all the way to Gaza. It didn't spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock, with their tents, like a swarm of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. And Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. So you got to catch this, right? Mostly it's an agrarian society. They're having farmers. And every single time the crops would be ready, they'd be like, okay, we have enough food. We can actually harvest it. We'll store it. We'll have enough for the winter. The Midianites would say, hey, it's harvest time. And they'd go, and they'd sweep in, and they would take it all. And the Israelites were left with nothing. And so they say, oh, God, you got to help us. You got to help us. You got to help us. And God said, hold on a second here. I've been doing this for a while already. And every time I help you, you don't listen. And I send you prophets, and you turn, but you don't really turn because you really just want me to bail you out. But, and this is the really interesting thing, God loves them enough that he answers their cries for help anyway. So, go a little bit later in the chapter, starting at verse 11, we read this. Well, the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak at Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abrezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. We're going to come back to that because it's very significant. And when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. And Gideon went, pardon me, my Lord. Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, then why has all this happened to us? Where are all these wonders that our ancestors told about when they said, did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us. He's given us into the hand of Midian. And the Lord turned to him and he said, go with the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Pardon me. Second question. My Lord. Gideon replied, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, which is one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and I am the least in my family. And the Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. Now, you cannot read this and not come to the conclusion that how Gideon sees himself and how God sees Gideon are about as far apart as you can possibly imagine, right? They are not even close. Gideon sees himself this way, God sees himself this way. So I was thinking, so what's going on here? What is Gideon, you know, what's the root of all of his problems here? And it's because his identity is rooted in the wrong place. Because here's the thing, right? When we talk about the issue of identity, my identity is often based on what I see about me. It's what I see around me. It's all the information I got. It's exactly what's going on here with Gideon. Right? Gideon drew his identity, who he was, how he saw himself, from a couple different places. We do the exact same thing. First of all, he took it from his past, and we do this. We pull it from all of our experiences, all the things that have happened. Gideon says, look, pardon me, I can't save Israel. I'm from the weakest clan. In other words, here's this whole clan of people. Then there's this really weak clan. We got nothing. We got no influence, no power, no nothing. And then within that, I'm like the weakest of that. I'm on the bottom end, right? I'm the runt of the litter, is basically what he's saying. I never accomplished anything great, and neither has my family. I'm a family of nobodies. And I wonder how often we look at our past to determine who we are. I wasn't smart in school. My friends ignored me. I was never good at anything. I was never part of the in crowd. I come from a family of angry people. That's just who we are. See, what Gideon did is he looked at his family, his history, his past. He said, this is who we are. Not just that. He also did it by what other people think. See, the angel, if you read the story, it goes on. The angel actually gives, the angel of the Lord gives him directions. He says, I want you to do something. I want you to destroy these idols to other gods. I want you to build a real altar. And Gideon listened, but here's how he listened. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him. But because he was afraid of his family and the townspeople, he did it at night rather than the daytime. Which, by the way, didn't work. If you read the story, they all got up. They figured out where the tire tracks went to. You know, they figured out where he came from, and they found him anyway. But Gideon, and maybe it was just smart that he was doing it, but that's not what we're told here. It says he was afraid. He was so worried about everybody else that it actually impacted how he did his life. You can see there's a pattern going on here. And I wonder sometimes how much of our identity is set by what we think everybody else thinks of us. And I wonder how much of us, it's probably not an if, it's how much of our identity is set to some degree by other people. My dad called me stupid. I remember getting laughed at by others at these specific points in my life. They burn. They cause me. That's why I don't talk anymore. And we think of all these things that are people, and they do one of two things to us. They either take our identity and we say, oh my goodness, I'm nothing because this is what people think of me. Or sometimes it's positive, right? You're the class clown, and I'm like, I have to be that person. I have to be funny all the time. That's what they said. And then sometimes it goes the other direction. We get so bothered by what other people have said, what our parents have said to us, what our siblings have said, that we say, I'm not going to be that person. I'm going to be this person. And everything about driving our identity is still being shaped by other people. It's just being shaped on the flip side. But it's also connected by how I see God. Here's what I mean by this. Do you notice his response to the angel? Angel says, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Singular. Personal. You know what his response is? Hey, you haven't been with us. Right? He goes from the singular to the plural. He says, but the Lord, what has happened to us? You know, didn't we hear all these great things? You haven't been around anywhere. Did you catch what Gideon's saying? He's saying, you say you're with me? You're not even with us. Like, you've been absent. You haven't done anything. I mean, we've been looking for you, and look what's going on here. God, you're not even here. You're absent. You're not paying attention to us. We are nothing in your eyes, God. You are uninvolved, and you have abandoned us to the enemy. See, the way that Gideon saw himself and his people was through the lens of aloneness. And when our identity starts to become warped and we begin to see things because of our past and by what others think, and we are not bringing God into the equation, we begin to view ourselves that way. If you actually look it up online, you can go to Amazon. There's a book called Psychology for Dummies in which you can take lessons on how to build your identity. It's literally, that's what it says. Here's the steps on creating your own identity. So what they're doing is saying, hey, you want to be this kind of person? This is up to you. You have to create this. There's how you need to act. Here's the things you need to say. Here's the things you need to do. And they're actually trying to tell you how to do this. Do you know that politics nowadays is called what? Identity politics. There's a reason for that. It's all about identity. Where do you belong? Who can you badmouth? Who can you not? If you're not part of a group, then I'm going to run you down unless you're part of this group. And the result is people are constantly trying to prove themselves either to themselves or to others because God is absent. He's been completely removed from the equation. And whenever our identity gets messed up, it reflects how we actually see how God interacts with us. Now, this has a logical set of consequences. And they're simply this. That without God's perspective, I will serve my own interests. I kind of look at it two ways in here. So the first one I see is this, is I'll end up protecting myself. Look what Gideon does. And that actually kind of is an interesting thing because the whole story begins here. It says, the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak tree where his son Gideon was threshing in a wine press. Now, we don't get this because we're not farmers. Some of you have been in church a long time, have heard this before, right? Wine presses were in the ground, right? They would dig out these vats, these things in the ground. They would dump the grapes in them, and they would have a system where you'd step on them, you'd crush the grapes, you'd get the wine, and that's how you began the whole process, okay? Totally made sense. When you threshed wheat, you had to do it above ground. Because what they did with wheat was they crunch it up a little bit, and it separates the chaff, the outer edge, from the kernels. And what they would do is in doing this, they would toss the wheat in the air, and the wind blows away all the chaff, and what falls to the ground is the heavier wheat. That's how they thresh the wheat. It's how they collect it, okay? He's doing that in a pit. There's no wind in the pit. There's nothing. This is the worst possible place you could thresh for wheat. And do you know why he was doing it there? Because he was fearful. He was scared. Because if the Midians could see it above ground, you might lose it all. So I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to do this. I'm going to tuck myself down where nobody can see me. No one can challenge me. No one can do anything. And that's where I'm going to do this. When our identity is off and it's being shaped by our past and by other people, what it does is it causes us to protect. And you know this. I've heard this story over and over. It's been part of my own life. You're a teenager. You try to do something. You get mocked and you get laughed at. And you say, you know what? That is never going to happen to me again. So I am not putting myself out there anymore. I'm not sharing anything anymore. I'm going to build a wall. I'm actually going to protect myself. And sometimes we do it through not sharing. Sometimes we do it through sarcasm. Sometimes we do it through humor. Sometimes we do it through anger. But I am going to protect myself. And instead, we've taken our whole identity, we've turned it in to protect ourselves. Take all kinds of forms. So there's a second thing I see here. I'll be reluctant to take the right kind of risks. So we get to the end of this chapter. Very famous story. If you've ever heard the term putting out a fleece, this is where it comes from, Judges chapter 6, okay? Because Gideon says to God, God goes through this whole thing, and then Gideon says, well, God, if you will save Israel by my hand as you promised. In other words, I'm pretty clear on what you're asking me to do. I'm not sure you're actually going to do this, so I need you to prove it. And so he does this whole test where he takes this woolly fleece, he puts it outside and says, hey, you know, in the morning when it gets cold and everything gets covered in dew, here's what I want you to do, God. I want you to have this fleece completely dry. Well, everything around it is soaked in dew. God says, okay, I can do that. He does it. It's amazing, right? It's the only thing drying this whole thing. And Gideon goes, hey, that's awesome. I still don't believe you. Can you do something else? Okay? In fact, I want you to flip it. Tomorrow I want everything to be bone dry, but I want this fleece to be soaked with dew. God says, I can do that too. So he's going, he's trying to prove himself over and over. And you get the sense from Gideon that he's reluctant to take the risk that God is calling him into. See, some people in their identity, they actually love risk. But the reason they're taking risks is not the right reason, because they're still trying to prove themselves to other people. Sometimes we're trying to prove it to people who are dead. I still am trying to prove to you, Dad, that I can do this. But what ends up happening is when our identity is messed up, we don't do the things that God is calling us to do. We're not leaning in where he wants us to do, because we're doubting the presence of God. So, it all ends up landing here. And this is where the whole story of Gideon sits for me, is my identity that needs to be based on how God sees me. So I want to look at two statements. They seem to be completely contradictory. I don't know if you caught them when we read the story, okay? But I think they're both critical to this whole idea of identity. Here's the first idea. God actually sees me through the lens of his might and his power. So when he looks at you, when you answered that third question, right, when God's talking to his angels and what does he say about you, he's not looking at you through the lens of who you are. He's looking through himself at you. Look at what he says. The angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon and said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. You might think he was being sarcastic, right? He's in a wine press threshing wheat by himself. I don't think he was being sarcastic. I think God could see something that Gideon could not see. God sees what Gideon could become. And he could look at Gideon and he could see what would happen if Gideon trusted God. It's actually not a coincidence. The angel connects God's presence to his identity. Mighty warrior, God is with you. And if you look later, when he finally listens to God after all the things, we read this, then the Spirit of the Lord came on Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and he summoned the Abrazites to follow him. When he finally leaned in, and he said, okay, God, I don't feel like a mighty warrior, but that's what you see, and the Spirit of the Lord came on him, and he was empowered. See, what we have to understand when it comes to identity is that when God looks at you, he doesn't see you the way you see you. He sees so much more. Do you know that God's opinion of you is always higher than your opinion of yourself? Always. Because he looks at you and he sees past all the games and all the facades and all these things we're trying. He says, no, I see you like you really are. You could be amazing because I am with you and I will empower you through my Spirit. Gideon's response is so typical. Who, me? I couldn't do that. Not a chance. You're asking me to do that? No way. That's just not me. That's not my style. And yet God looks and he says, I look, I don't see you that way. I see you differently. And I think, well, that's really cool, right? I read the story. I'm like, okay, well, God, he's going to empower him by his Holy Spirit. You know, he's going to put him on him. He's going to cause him to be a mighty warrior. But there's this really interesting sentence in the middle that seems to contradict this. I don't know if you caught this. Here's the thing. Look at verse 14. The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel. I thought, oh, hold on. That was kind of one of those timeout moments. We just read a few verses later that he's going to be empowered by the Holy Spirit. And we read just before that he says, mighty warrior, God is with you. And then in the middle he says, oh, by the way, and go in the strength you have. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Is he telling him to go do it on his own? Like, okay, Gideon, because Gideon is not looking at this going, I don't have any strength. Right? I remember I'm in the weakest clan. I got nothing. I don't have anything to bring. But he's saying, Gideon, go in the strength you have. So they almost seem to be contradictory. Go do what you're going to do, or God is going to be with you. Is it this one, or is it this one? And the answer, of course, is yes. What is God saying? He's saying to Gideon, you have everything you need to be who I am calling you to be. So he says, look, I am sending you. Gideon, you've already got this. It's hard for me to overestimate or overstate this. When God looks at Gideon, he sees him the way he could be. He says, look, Gideon, I saw you before I ever created you. I saw you eons before creation even started. I knew what you were going to be like. I actually designed you this way. I created in you everything you needed to do the things that I have ready for you to do. You don't have to be them. You don't have to be that person. You don't have to have that. You don't have to have that. You don't have to have that, because I've already given everything you need. So go do what you're going to do. And as you do that, my spirit will come alongside and empower you. Most of us, and if I tell you the struggles that I've had over the last 10 years have all been wrapped up right here. Because I look around and I think, oh, I want to be like that person. Oh, I want to be able to speak like that person. Oh, I want to be able to do this like this person. Oh, man, they are so good that I want to be like that. And there's this yearning and this desire that says I'm not content with who I am, because who I am is not enough. And if I could just be more like that, more like that, more like that, and pull it in, everything would be better. And God's all this time saying, no, that's not who I made you to be. I made you to be like this. And it's amazing. You're a mighty warrior. Go get it done. Friends, every single one of us have been created by God for the very purposes that he has assigned for you. You are exactly who he wants you to be. And when our identity gets messed up, what's really going on is we are trying to be someone that we're not. And when we do that, we tend to walk away from God. We do things in our own strength, and it doesn't work. Your identity is actually grounded in God's reality. Let me say it this way. Who you are is not defined by your past, by what's happened to you, or the things that you've done before. It doesn't matter if it's this week, this year, a decade ago, or 40 years ago. Who you are is not set by that. It's influenced by that, of course, right? These things have an impact on our lives and how we see each other. But who you are, how you define yourself, is not that. We in the Pursuit of a Healthy Soul groups that we've done a few times, what's the thing we always say? We say, you have been victimized, but you are not a victim. Yes, bad stuff has happened to you, but that doesn't decide who you are. But not only that, you are not simply the collection of the things that other people have said about you. And I know, because I've had these discussions, you are not dumb. Because people all through your life said, oh, you're dumb, you're in the slow class, there's nothing, you got nothing to offer. You are not the person who has no skills because someone said, oh, you're so stupid. You can never get anything done right. And those things, they sink into our souls and they start to reside there. And we begin to define ourselves that way. And then I know some of you who have heard those things and said, I am not going to be that. I'm going to prove to you that I'm not that. And we're spending all of our energy trying to accomplish something in our own power. It's not who you are. And you are far more than the sum of your accomplishments. Look what I did. Here's where I went. This is what I got. This is the size of my paycheck. This is how many people I've won to Jesus. It's not your identity. In fact, I find it interesting that Gideon was called a mighty warrior and he had done nothing. Zip. What you are is created by God for a marvelous purpose. And in order to partake in that marvelous purpose, you have to begin to see yourself the way he sees you, or you will always say no to him. I'll give you an example of how this works. Someone comes to know Jesus and is fairly new in the process, and someone comes to them once in a church and says, hey, I've watched you with kids. I think you'd be great. I think you should come back and work in the kids' ministry and teach them. And they go, oh, no, I could never do that. I'm not comfortable with that. In fact, I've never really liked kids. They always treat me this way, and I'm really intimidated by them, and they have a whole laundry list of reasons why they won't. And do you know that almost all those are identity related? Instead of saying, you know what? God is speaking, and I'm actually going to take a risk. Because if I go to this and I fail, God doesn't look at me any different. By the way, when that happens, people don't fail because they're doing what God calls them to do. I don't know what it is that God is inviting you into, but he's created you for this marvelous person, and you are empowered by his Holy Spirit to do the things he sends you to do because it's who you are. And I will tell you this, when Satan is going to attack, he goes after your identity every single time. Every time. You know, that's what he did with Adam and Eve. Is that really true? I mean, come on. You guys could be so much more. If you took the fruit, you'd know right from wrong. You'd be like God. And you know when Jesus was being tempted by the devil, you know what the devil did? He said, if you're the Son of God. I don't really know if that's true. Wants him to doubt his identity. He will try to minimize you to convince you that you are incapable or incomplete or not good enough. And he wants you to react with fear instead of risk. Or he's going to want to puff you up to make you proud of your talents, your accomplishments, your paycheck. He either wants you, I mean, here's the thing. He wants you to wreck your identity by having you compare yourself to other people. Either because I'm here and they're there, and so I've got nothing, or I'm here and they're there, look at me. Right? Both unhealthy. He says, no, look at yourself the way I do. When he comes to Gideon, and that's why the story is so awesome, because he says, Gideon, you're a mighty warrior. And Gideon's like, I don't think so. God says, hey, you've got what you need. I'm going to walk with you. Let's go get it done. And he saves Israel from an enemy that was beyond counting with 300 men. And in that moment, I wonder if Gideon remembered what the angel said. God is with you, mighty warrior. When your identity is grounded in God's reality, you guys are mighty warriors. So here's your assignment for this week. I want you to think about your identity, and here's how I want you to do it. I want you to pay attention to the soundtrack of your mind. Here's what I mean by that. As you go through your week and stuff happens, pay attention to the little words that pop out of your mouth or go through your head. Someone challenged me to do this years ago, and I didn't realize how bad my soundtrack was. I'd be in the garage, I'd be working, and you know, I'd have a cord going across, and I would just trip over the cord on my way across, and I'd go, idiot! Right? Anybody ever done something like that? You're so stupid. Why'd you do that? Oh, you can never get anything right. You know those little soundtracks? Every one of those reveals a flaw in your identity. Because that's not who you are. I can see Gideon hovering in the wine press, all turning on himself. And God says, no, 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 that's not who you are. Mighty warrior. I'm with you. So, I want to encourage you this week to see, lean into who you are in God. And if you don't know what that looks like, talk to someone. They'll encourage you in it because it's good.